This is Fight Back with Bob Fetrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3 102.1.
And this is Bob Fetrakis in the studio on a historic day in Ohio regarding torture, Abu Ghraib, and what happened at Guantanamo.
Today in the studio we have Josie Setzler, the executive director of the Seneca and Sandusky branch of NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and Michael Reese, both complainants and petitioners for the writ of mandamus. We also have Deborah Popowski from the Harvard Law School Human Rights Program, who's helping them bring these suits against Professor Larry James.
Michael, you're a veteran. Why do you think what was done by Larry James should be investigated by the board that governs psychologists in Ohio?
Well, Dr. James, as head of Guantanamo's Behavioral Science Consultation Team, had an ethical and a moral obligation to do no harm.
Okay, and what did he actually do?
How did he harm it?
Yeah, how did he harm people?
He was in charge of almost everything that went on, and he allowed it to happen. He participated in it, and that is very against the codes and the moral, ethical, and moral behavior that we expect from psychologists in the state of Ohio.
Okay, and the events that went on were basically torture. It's been pretty widely acknowledged. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's ask our mental health expert, why is it torture?
I'm concerned about why is it torture? The abuses that went on in the interrogation cause mental pain, cause psychological pain, and in some cases cause physical pain. The psychological pain can lead to physical illness. There are a lot of reasons why all of these kinds of practices can be called torture and are morally offensive to me. I've been interested in it as an abuse. I've been horrified that it's been an abuse of the rule of law in this country, but I'm also interested in it from the point of mental health advocacy. The people that I have been concerned with over the years in both my volunteer and professional work with NAMI have been people with serious mental illness. My own brother has schizophrenia, and I know how people with serious mental illness can end up in our prison systems. I've begun to see connections with what has gone on in Guantanamo with what can also happen in our own country, right here in the state of Ohio. One example of a practice that I think can amount to torture is solitary confinement, which has been practiced to a great extent in Guantanamo. This has been done against people who don't even know what charges they have against them, and it is long-term and extreme. Solitary confinement is being used in supermaxes in this country. It's being used for extended periods of time against tens of thousands of people. When I say extended periods, it can be decades. This has been happening in this country. People who have mental illness are often the kind of people who are vulnerable and can end up in solitary confinement. I've been worried about the connections with what goes on outside of our country. When we get used to that, when we get used to the kind of practices that have gone on in Guantanamo, and when we approve of this, when we approve of our psychologists being involved with it, it's just a very short step for psychologists to become lax about these kinds of practices in our own country. We got used to this because people are afraid. They're afraid of people that they designate as terrorists. People are also afraid of people with mental illness. And so I'm, as a mental health advocate, am worried about the most vulnerable in our population and what can happen to them when they get caught in the prison system. So I think that what Larry James did in Guantanamo is directly relevant to what happens right here in Ohio.
Right. And it's my understanding, too, that the role of a psychologist should be that, you know, it's a helping profession, right? And it seems like that was clearly not the role of psychologists and doctors who were taking part in some of these torture activities. In fact, they were maybe trying to push people to their limits using their knowledge about medicine and psychology. Is that, you want
That's
to talk
exactly
more about that?
One of the issues that they were being brought in. They have two hats they're wearing. They are military and they are psychologists. But can they take off their hat as a psychologist when they have an ethical obligation to protect the people that are under their care? The knowledge that they had of those prisoners was knowledge that they were supposed to use to help exploit them in the interrogation process. And that's a conflict of interest that we consider a major ethical breach.
Right. Deborah, why would a prestigious law school like Harvard be interested in coming into Ohio? How would you explain this? And legally, what did you do today? What does it mean you filed a writ of mandamus?
Well, we'd be interested in coming to Ohio because it's a lovely state, first of all. And actually, we were asked. We started working on this case at the request of Dr. Trudy Bond. She's a psychologist from Toledo who has been really concerned about the involvement of psychologists in torture for years now, and is really, like Michael and Josie, I think a hero in the sense of just really standing up for what's right. And she came to us, and she had originally attempted to file a complaint against Larry James a couple years before, and the psychology board that she filed with had refused to investigate and adjudicate. And we spoke, and I, we're part of this. We have a program at Harvard Law School, Human Rights Program, that looks at the involvement of health professionals, both physicians, psychologists, and other health professionals in the war on terror, specifically in their involvement in abuses. And we look at the intersection between professional ethics and human rights. And as your listeners are, I imagine, are aware, you know, during the Bush administration and to some extent still today, our government has been involved in hurting detainees as part of the war on terror, using techniques that, before they were used explicitly or blatantly by the United States, were very clearly by the United States called torture. And this program of torture enjoyed the central participation of the professional class, including, as very well-known lawyers, some of them, graduates of our institution, and many of them physicians and psychologists. Physicians and psychologists played a central role. They were asked to use their professional knowledge and skills not to help people, not to heal, which is what they are intended to do and what they take an oath to do, but rather than to identify physical and psychological weaknesses. We think this is a big concern. We are an international human rights program, and so we've done a lot of comparative research, and we see how this happens all the time when governments get into the business of systematic torture. The medical profession, the psychology profession, is always close at hand. And many times, it's really, there have been some studies and some research that shows that in order to really come to terms with what our government has done in our name, we all have a responsibility to acknowledge the different roles of different players played. And until the profession acknowledges or comes to terms with the fact that their membership was involved and played a central role in torture, it's very difficult for us to imagine that we wouldn't fall into the same trap and do it again. And in fact, we're very concerned that it is still going on today under the Obama administration.
Yeah.
Does it matter that in any way that he's a psychologist and not a psychiatrist? Is he a psychologist in part because no medical doctor, a psychiatrist, could get away with this? Does that play into it? Is there a different standard at work here?
So actually, there are some interesting, the way that the different professional associations, the private voluntary associations like the American Psychological Association and the Medical Association have responded has been really interesting. But before I answer that in depth, there are physicians who have been involved and continue to be involved in torture at Guantanamo Bay and in other prisons run by the United States. So although the medical profession has issued some policy statements that are stronger and That are stronger against torture than the American Psychological Association. Unfortunately, their acts have been limited to just making those statements. And as of 2009, when all this information had come out about physicians, the American Medical Association had yet to acknowledge as an institution that physicians were involved, even though there's a lot of evidence. So, yes, to some degree, it matters in the sense that there's been even more pushback from the psychologists in terms of this, but let's not say that there hasn't been, that the physicians have not also been implicated.
Michael, you were in the military. If somebody orders you to hurt somebody, is that lawful? Do you do it? Is it insubordinate if you refuse to hurt, torture somebody?
Well, according to the UCMJ, which is the Uniform Code of Military Justice, if you directly disobey a direct order, you can be punished under the law.
But what if they order you here to do something? Are we sure this is torture? If it's torture, can you be ordered to torture? Would that be one of his defenses, either as a psychologist or as a military man?
Well, I, from what I understand, he was basically making the rules, not following them. And there is a very large difference there.
Well, and it seems like James was also the supervisor, right? So, I mean, he was kind of the head of the department.
Correct.
So James was a colonel at the time, and according to his own book, he's actually written a book called Fixing Hell, An Army Psychologist Confronts Abu Ghraib, where he, a lot of the information, the complaint that Josie and Michael filed is actually based on information in his book. He admits, he claims to have had an enormous amount of influence in Guantanamo. Of course, he then claims that he actually used it to protect people to some degree, although some of his admissions in the book constitute exploitation and not actually protection. But yes, he was a colonel, and he was head of a team called the Behavioral Science Consultation Team, which is a team of mental health professionals that were taken and tapped to assist in interrogations, to assist interrogators in how best to exploit people. He claims to have had the ear of Major General Jeffrey Miller, notorious a commander of the base of Guantanamo during one of the times of the worst abuse. And also, Dr. James claims to have written the BISCIT is the acronym, the Behavioral Science Constitution Team policy for the entire, to have assisted in the writing for the entire Department of Defense. So, Bob, you're asking, is it illegal to, you know, can you disobey an unlawful order? In fact, you actually, yes, it's true what Michael said, but you also have that goes to lawful orders. You have an obligation to disobey unlawful orders. And I think it's really important to know that this has been a principle since, in terms of international criminal law, a principle since the Nuremberg trials that were, you know, adjudicated, that were presided over by U.S. justices, in which you defense of, you know, saying that you were just following orders is not a valid defense. And all that said, we're not talking about military law. We're not talking about criminal law. We're talking about the ethics. And so it may be one thing, what's lawful, what, you know, what he was pressured to do, or maybe what he ordered other people to do. But at the end of the day, what we're talking about and what we're asking the Ohio Board of Psychology to do is to enforce its own standards. And this is the same standards that Dr. Bond is held to and every other psychologist is held to in the state of Ohio. And that is, you know, to not hurt people who they're duty-bound to protect, that is to maintain confidentiality, that is to not enter into relationships where they exploit people, and that is not to lie, not to misrepresent who they are and what they've done. Those are the standards. Those are the standards that he had to have met in order to get a license in Ohio. Those are the standards that the Ohio Board disregarded when granting him a license, and those are the standards that they continue to disregard when they ignore the evidence and continue to allow him to be licensed and to stay as dean of the School of Professional Psychology at Wright State.
So when Trudy Bond filed the original complaint, what was the response by the board? What has happened so far, and what has led you to file the writ of mandamus today? How's all that going?
Just one before, the clarification is that mandamus today is with respect to a different complaint that was filed in July of 2010, so about 7 or 8 months ago, and it was filed by Mr. Reese, by Josie, by Dr. Bond, and by Reverend Colin Bossen.
Okay.
And that's what we're challenging the dismissal today, but I'll let Josie jump.
Okay, that was filed in July of this past year. It was 50 pages the complaint was, and it was supported by 300 footnotes with 1,000 pages of documentation. In February, we received a reply that was three sentences, and the operative sentence was, it has been determined that this matter cannot... how did it go? Deborah, please help me.
It has been determined that we are unable to proceed to formal action on this matter. There were actually four sentences. The fourth sentence was thank you.
Okay.
I think the first sentence was...
And so there was no information in those four sentences that addressed the substance of the complaint. And in fact, they put it they distanced themselves as much as possible by saying it has been determined that, without giving any indication that by whom and whether
passive voice.
We should get out of that passive voice. And there's no indication that any investigation occurred. And this ought to be a public matter. It ought to be investigated in some public fashion.
Right. And so a writ of mandamus asks people, asks a public official to do their duty, to do their job, right? And it
That's
seems
right.
like they've clearly indicated in that letter to you their unwillingness or their inability to do their job. So
That's right.
This is Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3 102.1. And in the studio with us now we have Deanna Gaskin and Ben Hoffman, students at the Harvard Law School International Human Rights Clinic, also to talk about their work on the case.
Michael, you wanted to make a point before the break there?
Well, we were just looking at some of the documentation, and I need to say, first of all, that in all, the board complaints allege violations of 18 provisions of Ohio statutes and board ethical rules, or ethics rules. Petitions supported the board with complaints for over 1,000 pages of documentation. The board complaints cited reports, records, and hearings from the U.S. military, the Senate, Department of Justice, the Central Intelligence Agency, as well as statements from survivors and witnesses.
All right, well, let's talk to the students. Were either of you involved in bringing these documents forward to support the allegations, Ben?
So I started working on this case in January of this year, right at about the same time that the Board of Psychology issued this letter dismissing the complaint that was submitted in 2010. And we went into brainstorming mode and started to think about possible avenues of pushing the effort and the struggle forward. And one of the things that we realized quickly is that there is no administrative appeal mechanism for this dismissal because the board never actually went to an adjudication. And without any means to appeal, the only remedy available for the petitioners in this case is the writ of mandamus. And we got involved in starting to do the legal research and writing about how to bring a writ of mandamus petition.
Deanna, what was your involvement?
I, too, got involved in January, right around the time that we received the four-sentence letter from the board. And I think we were all just so shocked by it, by how short it was, and by how it really seemed to be just a clear abuse of discretion, and the fact that there was so much well-substantiated claims in the complaint. And so, along with Ben, we started to think of what options we had and what avenues we could pursue.
So with a writ of mandamus, you're really ordering this board, are you not, to do their job? Is that what you're doing?
Well, we're asking the court to order the board to do its job.
Well, the board clearly doesn't appear not to do its job with the four sentences, but they were courteous.
They were courteous. But we believe it's their clear duty, so we're just asking them to do what they're supposed to do.
What would you like this board to do, Ben? I mean,
well, there's a couple different things that the petition for writ of mandamus is asking for. The first thing that we're asking for is that the board proceed to formal action against Larry James. And formal action could consist of either an adjudicative hearing in which all the evidence against him would be examined and they would determine whether or not violations occurred. Or it could result in a consent agreement in which they would speak with Larry James and try to seek some sort of an agreement about what happened and possible disciplinary action that he would agree to.
And that could be the loss of his license?
One of the disciplinary remedies available to the Board of Psychology in regulating the profession is revocation of licenses, yes.
Now, you've looked at other cases. As I recall from reading the newspapers, I believe it was Judge Bybee and wasn't it John Yoo that the Bush administration itself suggested they should lose their law license, and that was never followed up by the Obama administration. As I recall, Attorney General Holder suggested perhaps we let bygones be bygones. Does that atmosphere figure into what you're doing? Are you trying to draw the line here in terms of what is ethical conduct?
I would definitely say that there is a clear connection here. We're talking about the responsibility of professionals in complying with the ethical rules that govern their professions. So whether it's a lawyer or a psychologist or a doctor or a physician, these professions, by virtue of their training, have the potential to do great harm. And it's very important that the bodies that are in charge of ensuring that they comply with their ethical rules actually fulfill that obligation.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I agree. These professions are so trusted by the public, and they often deal with the public when they're at their most vulnerable, when they most need help. And so I think especially physicians and psychologists and lawyers need to uphold the highest ethical standards, because so much harm can be done, as we've seen, when they don't.
The reaction of the board is really just shocking, that they would not really investigate anything, that they wouldn't take any action, and that they hardly even made a comment. It just makes me question what their motive could be, what's actually going on underneath that four-sentence letter that really just doesn't give you any information at all. It basically just says, hey, we're not taking any action. It doesn't even, you know, it doesn't really give any explanation. And it just, you know, makes us wonder, it raises a question, what's going on there? Are they, you know, why are they protecting this guy without even looking into it? It seems like, you know, if a patient complained about their psychologist for some kind of abuse, that would be investigated, and that's what the Board of Ethics is for. So any ideas, Bob, or, you know, to our guests here, what's going on? What motives are involved there? What other conflicts of interest may be involved there that the board isn't doing anything?
I mean, I had one question. Are you worried about the notion that they're going to claim it occurred in foreign jurisdictions, or they have no authority because it happened in Cuba or Iraq? Does that factor into this at all?
The board clearly has jurisdiction to examine prior conduct of all licensees and applicants and conduct that happened abroad, and the military even relies on state licensing boards to regulate their employees, and also they require that the psychologists and mental health professionals that they hire have licenses. So we don't think that that's an issue. The board clearly has a duty to look into this conduct, even though it happened in Cuba.
Well, in their explanation, they didn't say that jurisdiction was the reason for their refusal either.
Correct. So they gave no evidence that jurisdiction was a reason for dismissal, or that that was even an issue.
In fact, they didn't really provide any explanation at all. So there's no, on the basis of this letter alone, there's no indication that there was any fault with the evidence presented in the complaint, and there's no indication there was any fault with jurisdiction. So, unfortunately, I really don't have an answer to your question. I don't know why the board didn't act.
Yeah.
It would appear on the face of it that it was absolutely arbitrary. It was not explained to be based on any rules of law.
Okay. So are they protecting Dr. James? Are they protecting him somehow? Are they, you know, involved in, do they have military interests? What's going on here?
That's really a good question. Are they protecting Dr. James or are they protecting the system?
The military interests? I mean, the ability for psychologists to be employed with the military or, you know, for Ohioans, people in Ohio, that we can get military contracts in Ohio? Is that what's going on? Because he's around Dayton, right? I mean, there's an Air Force base.
Wright-Patterson.
Yeah.
So I think right now the best we can do is speculate. And that's going to be unsatisfying for lots of different reasons. But in terms of the legal standard, a writ of mandamus can be issued for conduct that is arbitrary, unreasonable, or unconscionable.
Great.
So regardless of the motive, this is the perfect case for a writ of mandamus.
Does it cover all three? It seems every one of those words you said appears to apply in this instance.
They might.
Okay, you don't get your writ of mandamus from the Common Pleas Court in Franklin County, which I've appeared on occasion in. Do you appeal it to the 10th Appellate? Do you appeal it to the Ohio Supreme Court? How far are you willing to go?
Well, I think that's a question both for the lawyers in terms of the feasibility of the appeal, but also a question for the complainants themselves and how far they want to take this struggle.
Got an answer? Go ahead.
But this issue won't go away. So regardless of what happens with this litigation, there's still the fact that there's somebody here in Ohio who's licensed and who we believe participated in torture.
Right, and he's teaching young minds.
Right, shaping
you know,
the next generation.
Yeah, the next generation of professionals who are going to be working in prisons and mental institutions and other, you know, working with the public. And isn't it problematic if they are trained basically to assist in torture?
And just one thing that I'll add to that is that even if the litigation goes away, it's just one component of a much larger struggle, a grassroots struggle that's actually going on all throughout the country to seek accountability for the harms that were that occurred in Guantanamo. And we're currently in the process of creating a petition to try to leverage more pressure on the board to fulfill its responsibilities, and we're working with different media campaigns to raise awareness about this issue so that it's on people's consciousness.
I mean, one question, and I don't know if you've contemplated it, but it seems that these tortures, these alleged tortures, some proven in the past, used to be at least be done more covertly. We used to hide this stuff, and it would come out years later in declassified documents. These allegations, which are written about in his book, which have been made public, it seems, and I don't know the reason why, these seem to be fairly blatant reinterpreting of what torture stands for. Why is that happening? Do you perceive it that way?
Well, for one thing, I think one of the things that came into play with the things that people saw across America were driven by the fact that the people who were doing them had no fear of what was going to happen to them.
Okay, 2 minutes, minute each for the guests. What are you thinking on this issue?
I think a lot of it has to do with the culture of fear in which we're living now. And the idea that we are willing to sacrifice some of these moral values that we might have in light of concerns about national security, which in the process really just causes us to privilege a notion of national security at the expense of a much larger notion of a collective global security.
Last word.
I agree. I think it's fair that's driven these actions, and I think they can call it whatever they want, but it's still torture, and that's really scary.
This has been Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell Newton.
And this is Bob Fitrakis thanking our guests for coming in and dealing with the hard issues and also, I believe, leaving a historically significant record, because I think when future historians look back, they're going to thank the students in Harvard University and the people here in Ohio that filed this complaint and were willing to stand up on torture when it was happening and at tremendous expense to themselves.
Thank you so much for being our guests.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thanks for the work that you're doing on this case. This has been Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3 102.1.